Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined as always by the legend Les Thatcher. Closing in on Christmas, I sincerely hope you have done at least most of your Christmas shopping at this point, especially since if you got to send out packages, the deadline to not pay through the nose is, let's see, as we record this on the 16th, tomorrow. Post office says if you can send them out by tomorrow, they can get there by Christmas and you don't have to pay anything extra. After tomorrow, it's all about the express packages, priority mail, and making the USPS extra happy and perhaps covering their costs for this holiday season. Les, how many gifts have you bought this year?
I've just got to stop and really think about that. None. Not yet. As you know, I'm going to be out of town. I'm going to be gone for the next two, well, starting this next week until I'll be back on the first. So the wife is doing a lot of the shopping and stuff, and I'll throw my 2 cents worth in. Actually, it cost me more than 2 cents, but
right,
I will, and so that's a good thing. I started taking after my dad. I remember he used to go out on Christmas Eve, right, to shop. And one time I finally said, you know, Dad, you go out on Christmas Eve a lot shopping. Yeah. I said, he said, well, there may not be as good a selection, but the prices are better.
Well, that's a fact, right? They were all trying to get rid of it.
They sure are. Yeah. So never, not to say if I'm not frugal, it's not because my dad wasn't. So, well, but yeah, it's, but don't you, well, you don't have any children, but, from my childhood, but then from when my kids were young, Christmas just not the same to me anymore. It is, well, part of it, I think too, Vic, is because it's a damn commercial, right? I mean, it's like late September and you're starting looking at Christmas decorations and things. And then we're hearing Christmas carols in the stores around, Halloween and on and on. So I just, you know, and as a kid, actually you started seeing Santa Claus and Christmas trees and Christmas music in retail stores on what we call now Black Friday. You know, yeah. Usually the day after Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
But not anymore. Well, we got a couple cable channels that run Christmas movies 12 months out of the year, right? Ask me how I know.
And a couple that are already running them 24 hours a day from now till Christmas.
Yeah. The reason I know that, my wife and my stepdaughter seem to record every Christmas show that they possibly can. And my answer to that is the stories are all the same. It's kind of like some of the wrestling shows I watch.
Yeah,
right?
Don't want to spoil it for you, but it's going to be a happy ending.
Yes. Yeah, right. Star A shows up in a town, Star B, and they're there to either put the Star B out of business or something. And then they both don't live in that town, but they just got history there. And then they finally meet and they butt heads and finally they come together and realize this is true love. And the one who doesn't live there makes the adjustment and ends up there and all is well. How's that for the story?
You've just handled it. All of them.
You've seen a couple of those movies, haven't you? Whatever. They're probably making more money than we are, so what the hell?
I know they are. That's a fact. But, you know, normally yes. We come out here and I talk about what a newsworthy week it was. We could probably literally spend the entire hour on just two stories in WWE alone. We'll bounce around as much as we can, of course, because it was a very busy week packed with all sorts of news. But the majority of it really this time is in WWE, which is not something we've been able to say over the last couple of months. We normally start with AEW, but I think we have to start with WWE and dig into a couple of really interesting things that have come out this week. And obviously, we're going to be starting with the impending return, allegedly, of Vincent Kennedy McMahon, or at least he would very much like to return. Whether or not that actually happens is a whole nother deal, and the fallout with that and how that would affect Paul Levesque, Stephanie, and Nick Khan. There are a lot of questions about that. But first things first, none of that has happened to the best of our knowledge yet. But let's talk about what we saw here in the Wall Street Journal. You might remember, if you got a long memory, all the stories that ended up with Vince resigning from the company came from the Wall Street Journal. They had more news earlier this week revealing that not only has Vince's attorney received a letter from Rita Chatterton's lawyer back on November 3rd asking for nearly $12 million in damages. Chatterton, who was known briefly in the 80s as the first female referee in WWE history, at that time she was known as Rita Marie, publicly accused Vince of raping her in the back of a limo in New York in 1986. And also this month, because it's just been a terrible, horrible, awful month for Vince, apparently, his attorneys received an email from a lawyer from a former spa manager who says McMahon assaulted her at a resort back in 2011, and that incident had not been reported in the media until now. So these things are coming out around the same time Vince has allegedly been saying, according to the article in the Wall Street Journal, that he's been receiving bad advice from people who encouraged him to step down, and he feels like he made a mistake, that if he had stayed in power, this whole thing would have blown over. But if he had stayed in power now, Les, and the whole thing had blown over, and then these two letters come out, I mean, would he have survived the second round of this?
I can't imagine. You know, and the other thing is, this is, you know, back in the old days when Vince owned WWWF or WWE or WWF or whatever, but that probably would have worked because, you know, it wasn't a publicly held company. So it wasn't, you know, there was nobody to answer to except himself. That's not the case anymore. And of course, and they've got to be concerned with, you know, the stock market because they're a huge part of it. So I don't know if I had $1 billion and, at the age I am now or at his age, and he's a few years younger than me, hey, you can go do anything you want. You don't have to have pressure on you. I'm there, baby. but on the other hand, you know what? I know Vince, and I understand that because here I sit at 82, and I wish I had more of involvement on a day-to-day basis. I miss it. It's who I am, you know? And Lord knows it's who he is, you know? Like him or don't like him, you know, think he should come back or stay away or whatever. That's, you know, that's who he is. So, yeah, I realize something in his life is missing. But I don't think it's I can't say it wouldn't be to his benefit because I'm sure he, you know, be tickled to death to be back in the saddle. But and I meant that about the business, too. I realized I could have.
Oh, jeez. You said.
Never mind.
Yeah. Anyway, keep it moving.
Yes, keep it moving. Anyway, yeah, I would understand that, but I think in this day, no. I think some of the things I see Levesque doing, I'm for, you know, and I don't know. Of course, Vince maybe doesn't see it that way because it's not his vision, but yeah. I think that Stephanie and everybody that he will, all the people he thought gave him bad advice, better give him some more bad advice to him. You know, hey, go lay on the beach and burn a doobie or something. You know, it's, I don't think it'd be good for the company. I think probably spiritually it would be good for him, but I don't see it in any way, shape, or form being good for the company.
Well, you reference the stock price, and we have been speculating, not just us, but I mean everybody who covers this business on any level for a long time wondered what would happen to the stock if Vince ever found himself on the outside looking in for any reason. And I think much to the surprise of most when he announced he was leaving that the price went up and that Paul Levesque was taking over. And when the story broke on Tuesday, the price immediately went down. It's not obviously that simple, but there are a lot of very complex questions that would need to be answered if he did attempt to reinsert himself in the position of chairman and, of course, head of creative and all the other things he was spearheading as the head of the company. You've got the board of directors issue. He's appointed the majority of the board. So on one hand, you might think they're in his pocket. On the other hand, they do have a duty to the shareholders. And with even more stuff now apparently hanging over his head, if they were to approve his return, then you might have some very angry shareholders who might be interested in filing lawsuits, not to mention what's going on in his own house with Paul Levesque and Stephanie if he were to come back and want his previous roles back? And what do you do with Nick Khan, who obviously is tight with Vince, otherwise he never would have left the very lucrative business he was in to come help run this company? So there are a lot of moving parts where there are no easy answers, and Dave goes into those in some really good detail. It's definitely worth your time as a subscriber to the site and to the podcast, if you are, to check out this lead story at f4wonline.com. There's no real easy answers if he wants to wedge himself back into the company on a regular basis and be more than just the owner of the most amount of stock, because he does have the ability, I think, if he could get a couple of people on the board on his side to get back in and just turn it back into business as usual, for better or for worse, because of the way the stock is structured. He owns less than 40% of the shares, but he has 80% of the votes. So, I mean, if he really wanted to shoehorn his way back in, I think he could figure out how to do it. Whether or not it would be beneficial for the company is an entirely different question. And, you know, this is a company also, even though they haven't sold, you know, it's something we've been talking about, how a variety of companies might have been kicking the tires on that in recent years.
Sure.
And, you know, to walk in as the majority stockholder and potentially seriously drive down the net value of your company at a point in time in your life where you're also probably thinking about a continued legacy and what you want to leave behind for folks. And that would include financially for not just his kids, but for his kids' kids and their kids' kids and generations to come. I know you could look at his accounts now and say, well, that's already been taken care of. But you know what? When you're in the middle of it, and if that's any kind of priority for you, you always are going to want more to leave behind for them. And so, you know, how much sense does it make to really try and force your way back in here and potentially not only drive down the value of the company, but drive away potential buyers?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, seriously, here again, comparing, Vince is younger than I am, but comparing his age and my age, as much as I would love to be day-to-day involved in something, I'm not interested in 15-hour days. And that's, you know, and that's what it, what he does and wants to do, that's who Vince is, you know? And I'm not, you know, and I'm going to say, you know, Vince has been pretty damn healthy. I'm blessed to have been the same, but I you know what? I think a lot of his good health is simply because he does what he loves, right? What he had a passion for.
Sure.
I would say that, you know, again, I'm looking at his situation through my eyes, and yeah, do I miss it? You bet your ass I do. You know, I wish I had a big company was, I own 80% stock in. I own 100% stock in Les Thatcher Inc. it's worth about 50 cents, and that's not a share, that's the total value. But yeah, I do understand, and but yet I think for the betterment of the business and for that business to continue to grow as it certainly has, he needs to, you know, take a breath and enjoy his retirement.
So one of the other big stories in WWE, or at least WWE related this week, has to do with a topic that was on our list a week or two ago, but we didn't get to on the show because it was interesting, but didn't know whether or not there was a little more to it. And that was part of the reason that I didn't put it on the table, talking about Mercedes Varnado, a.k.a. Sasha Banks, who a couple of weeks ago now, I think, agreed to appear at the Tokyo Dome for New Japan's big January 4th show. And you wondered what was going on with that, and there's apparently a whole lot more to it. Our friend Mike Johnson over at PWInsider.com reported this week that not only will she be appearing, but she apparently has an agreement with New Japan, and that she has indicated to them after the first of the year she is a complete and total free agent with no more obligations to WWE. And they are working on, or have already put into place, a multiple date deal in both the U.S. and Japan to work in New Japan Pro Wrestling or their related promotions like Stardom. But for whatever reason, the folks at New Japan have made a decision that they believe they need a strong women's division every time they come to the U.S. and women's matches on their shows when they come to the U.S. And with Sasha Banks out there on the free agent market, she is a natural fit. And apparently the deal is for so much money that she's not going to be a regular on the tours in Japan, but just big shows in the U.S. and Japan as well. In fact, Dave reports this week that they're paying her even more than they were paying Chris Jericho, for what that's worth, because Jericho's math is a little different based on different percentages for certain events and such. But on a per-date deal basis, apparently she's signed for more than Chris got, or at least agreed to if there's not any paperwork as of yet. And then you factor in the idea.
She's better looking than Chris.
Well, I cannot argue that point at all. The other thing about that is that if she really is free and clear by the first of the year, I would have to imagine Tony Khan would be ready to back up the armored truck. And this was one where I would say, I know how big your roster is, but I don't care. Ask her what she wants and pay her. And it also puts them in a tough spot after the first of the year, because they've got that match with Saraya against Baker and Hayter on January 11th in LA with a mystery partner. I mean, if she's not the mystery partner, that match could be some really rough sledding.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, she's valuable. There is no two ways about it. I'd be curious what she's asking and what they're offering. Of course, we're not going to know, and I understand that too. But, you know, that's I read someplace here in the last couple of weeks where Triple H had done was about finance, you know, about payment, what people made and stuff, and that if you were, it wasn't that you were a main eventer, but your downside on if you were on one of the main rosters was $250,000 a year. I thought, good Lord, has the business come a long way?
Boy,
oh wow, yes. My first match in 1960. Well, first two matches, actually. I worked twice on that show. It was $12. So, well, if that was my downside,
I'll throw you out a couple of big money numbers. And you probably remember this because the story was out there for a while about Harley Race and the idea that Nick Bockwinkel at one time was approached and his interest was gauged on whether or not he would have desire to become the NWA champion. And one of the reasons he turned it down was because he was making $150,000 a year as the AWA champion and with a much lighter schedule, which he'd rather stick to than be Harley Race, who was on the road 7 days a week, 20 plus days out of the year, and doing all of that, like more than double the dates Bockwinkel was doing, and he was making $350,000 as the world champion.
Right. Of course, people, the young people now have got to realize what that was worth back then.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's certainly competitive to top guys' downside guarantees in WWE. But think about these guys who are at the top end of WWE. And when I say that, I mean the lower level of the top end where you've got that $1 million downside, which was the thing that Vince had established for his main eventers. But, you know, so it probably, if you were to do math in today's money, it's in the same ballpark as that. But consider, again, as difficult as the schedule can be these days, 3 or 4 days a week to make that, as opposed to what Harley Race was doing, which is probably wrestling 7 to 9 times a week for that money.
Right, right. Yes, you're absolutely right. And like I say, of course, people need to, the young people need to understand the difference in the economy at that point in time, too. I had a 76 Buick Electra 225 limited with all the goodies and, you know, extras and stuff like that, which brand new sold for about $8,000. I don't even know if you could buy the front fender of a Buick with all that stuff on it today for $8,000, never mind an entire car. But yeah, it was, well, you know, I said to somebody the other day, realize, you know, to make 70 grand in this business in a year back in the 60s, 70s, that was a lot of money. A lot of money. The gas, everything was cheaper. Everything. We're talking about getting Christmas packages. I forget what the hell did we pay for a stamp, a postage stamp back in the, say, the mid-70s. You remember?
Couldn't be more than a couple of cents, less than five. A nickel, a tops, yeah, right?
Probably a nickel. Yeah, maybe 6 cents at the outside.
Yeah.
I remember when the oil shortage, fuel shortage, whatever the hell shortage they wanted to call it, back in the 70s when you had to go by even and odd license plates and line up to get your gas. And gas had spiraled to the insane price of 75 cents a gallon.
How dare they?
We were incensed, right? Don't you wish you could get a gallon of gas a day for 75 cents? My God. But yeah, so that's, it's a big difference. She's valuable. Sasha to get back on the subject. Somebody's going to pay. I mean, somebody's going to pay her, and she may. You know, the truth is, I don't know what she's asking. She may be, pricing herself out with some people, but still, I mean, whatever she ends up getting, she'll be comfortable with it, I'm sure, and she will do a good job for somebody. And I don't know. You know, in terms of, if you're considering how you're used, et cetera, et cetera. Let's face it, still today, you can be the greatest fan of AEW or Impact or NWA or whoever, but it's the WWE people that are getting the biggest exposure, or the ex-WWE people that are gaining that same kind of exposure for the companies they're with now. Would I be correct in saying that?
You would be, yes, sir.
So really, if the money's right, you go back to WWE just simply because of that, if nothing else, I think. And because they're established. But who knows? But yes, it does sound, the plot thickens, as they say, right? And the fact is, what we had said too, and David mentioned, they could freeze her contract.
They sure can, or at least you would think so. So the idea that she's told people she believes she's a free agent in January, I mean, do you say that without having it on pretty good authority from somebody like Paul Levesque that you're going to be free and clear?
I don't think you should if you do.
Yeah.
I don't think that's smart. But like I say, she is most certainly a pickup for somebody, some company that's going to do them some good business. I mean, well, there again, does AEW have the money to sign her? Of course they do. But again, they've got a lot of women on that roster, but they've also got a lot that can barely slap their ass with both hands. And, that's the problem when it comes down to, who can perform here. You get limited numbers, so she certainly would be an extreme benefit in that regard, if nothing else.
Oh yeah, I mean, in terms of talent, she goes to the front of the line in the AEW women's division,
yes,
which would make her extremely valuable, because now you've got in addition to the whole bunch of new matchups, you've got someone who can help elevate other folks who may not be on that same level. But with that in mind, I want to ask you about this, because the New Japan deal, if it does in fact come to fruition, the dates are sporadic. They're great money, but she's not going to be on tour there and in Japan weeks at a time, wrestling night in and night out. So she's got a little more of a pick and choose thing where, whatever you want to do with her, she'd probably be a little more agreeable to, because the money's outstanding and she's not out there on a nightly basis. But the rep in WWE, fairly or unfairly, is that she was really talented, but issues behind the scenes. I mean, it's no secret that she's walked out on the promotion twice now at this point. Now, for me, and obviously we don't really know the full inside story, for me, I look at it and I see her, obviously, and I don't mean to compare her to CM Punk, but my point in mentioning him is that, her issues seem to me to be more about the same kind of things that piss off Punk. Like, if you're using me in a way that makes sense, I'm here. I don't care if it's thumbs up or thumbs down.
Right.
But if it doesn't make sense, I got a problem with it. And I have very little issue with someone who doesn't like what they're being asked to do if it makes no sense. So to me, it's sign her and don't worry about that stuff. Just book her like you make sense and she'll do what you ask her to do.
I see a lot of value. Of course, and what we're saying here too, but, one thing we haven't mentioned is that my friend Carl Anderson is going to have some dates with New Japan.
Well,
he is under contract at WWE.
That is true. In fact, he just completed a successful defense of the Never Open Weight Championship earlier this week and has got a big one at the Tokyo Dome on January 4th. So it's not like it can't work. I mean, just because she's going to be free and clear and may be able to put pen to paper in New Japan for January doesn't mean that she may not already have some sort of agreement with WWE that she hasn't made public.
Right. Absolutely. You know, I want to break into wrestling here. I do want to mention a thank you to, I'm not sure who, But as those who do listen to us not realize or may not remember, this past Monday I had surgery on my ear for skin cancer. But I my cut and paste guy, who sends me notes about what's on the observer board now and again, sent me, didn't write what was said, but is that one of the listeners had posted, heard me mention last week about that, and had posted the type of procedure and broke it down and told people exactly, you know, what it was and why they did it. And he was absolutely right, as far as I know, and from what my guy said. But anyway, for those who care, for those who don't care, it got done Monday. They had to cut twice. They got it all, as far as they know, as far as I know. It it was traumatic a little bit, but it's all well and good. It's just took the major bandages off yesterday, but I've got to keep it covered. The actual hole in the ear, after they patched it, they had to take some skin off behind my ear, off my neck, to help graft it. But the hole probably close to the size of a penny, and I'm not somebody to put one of those earrings in, right? Where you see through on some of these.
Oh yeah, sure.
To do those big, sir. I said, I don't think so. Thank you very much. So yeah, but for the next 2 weeks, I've got to change the dressing each day and put some ointment on it, and then the stitches are going to dissolve on their own. But I got to go back to the dermatologist on the 5th of next year. The 5th of January for them to check it and everything. But everything went well, and we're on our way to recovery, or at least I hope so. Anyway, and while we're on WWE, I know we're going to talk about Regal, but I want to mention one of my former kids, and Jamie Noble, came back to life in the ring this past week in West Virginia, in Charleston, and has been working behind the scenes. I didn't realize he hadn't wrestled in so long. And for those who don't know, he was with, when I was with WWE, and they bought, when Vince bought WCW, Jamie was one of the cruiserweights that was given to me in HWA. And so anyway, great talent, hell of a work ethic, and shout out to him. I saw some clips of the match. What a hell of a hand, a hard worker. I mean, his work ethic was just amazing when he was with me. But he'd put a picture of he and Drew Gulak up on social media, thanking Drew for helping him. And I wrote on it. I said, two of the guys that I'd be a trainer till I die if I could work with people like that. They had the work ethic of these two guys. And I was, cheering for Jamie in his last match. And he sent a nice note on Twitter and saying that, the year and a half he'd had with me was one of the funnest, is the way he put it, in his career. And that I had helped him a lot and helped him on the journey. And so I just, shout out to Jamie, man, love you. You've given so much to the business. God bless you. And, wish you the best with your family and help the guys behind the scenes in WWE.
By the way.
And what's next?
I want to piggyback off of that real quick and talk about Drew Gulak for just a moment and ask your opinion or your take on the way he's being used behind the scenes, so to speak. And I'll explain in just a second, because Sami Zayn was equally pleased to be in the ring with Jamie Noble on what is likely his last match. And he talked about how very few know how much he's truly contributed, and he's an unsung hero at WWE. Completely agree with that. But you mentioned Drew Gulak giving up his time to work with Jamie as he was getting ready to go back into the ring for this match. And I recall that when Bad Bunny was getting ready for WrestleMania, that WWE sent him a ring to Puerto Rico so he can get some work in. And they also sent Drew Gulak to work with him so he could get himself together for that. And just the idea of, just because you don't see him on television every week or he's not at the top of the card, there are ways that the company makes it very clear, whether they do it intentionally or not, of just how much you mean to them. And in an assignment like that, with a big match like a guy at Bad Bunny in WrestleMania and the level of star he is worldwide, and obviously here with Jamie as well, the fact that when somebody who's never done this before needs to get themselves together, or somebody who hasn't done it in a while needs to get themselves together, the company says, take Drew. He'll get you ready. That's a big deal.
Yes, it is. And he's, I consider him, he didn't start with me, but we've trained together so much, and he was on my roster in the LA tournament that we did out there. He's a hell of a hand, and I love him too. He's one of my kids. I'll tell you what, I'm sure he's helped anybody. I'm surprised at some point, or I shouldn't say that. I would be surprised at some point if they don't offer him a position at the Performance Center as a trainer full-time when he gets ready to hang him up. I would have thought when I was there, you know, Chris Hero was still working behind the scenes at the Performance Center, and I was under the impression that he would, and I think he was, Chris was offered a position with the PC, but he just, you know, had some other things he wanted to do first. But yeah, Drew's a hell of a hand. And I've told the story, and I won't get into that again. When I first met him a number of years ago, I was doing a weekend training camp for CZW in Philadelphia. And he, at the training and then on the Saturday night show, he and his opponent just, they stole the show. And when I went back to shake their hands and congratulate them, and he said, well, you know, Mr. Thatcher, we wanted to have a good match to show you that we listened this weekend. And if you're a trainer and somebody comes off with positive talk like that, you want to hug them, man, right? It's like, yes, you're the kind of people I love to work with. Yes. So like Drew and Jamie, yes, sir. They have work ethic. They have respect, and they love the business. Absolutely. I told, you know, we went down to Brad Armstrong's gravesite a few weeks back, Dr. Tom and I, and Kiwi, Alan Funk, and Lash LaRue joined us. But I told Alan then, I said, you know, when people bring up the developmental and everything, I said, I mentioned that you and Noble were my energizer bunnies. Those two guys could run the triple five, and you've seen the triple five.
Right? I have.
They could run the triple five and have a conversation at the same time.
Wow.
Yes. And if like we had an odd number of guys, and I said, I need somebody to run with this guy, you'd see Jamie or Alan step forward. I mean, without fail. So, yes. Great guys, great kids, and I'm proud to have been a part of their journey, and, you know, if you get a chance to work with a Jamie Noble or a Drew Gulak as a young wrestler, it's going to be a treat and an education, believe me.
We will get into some more AEW stuff here in the next few minutes, and I guess we'll use this as a bridge towards it, since he was very recently in AEW. You mentioned Regal before we got into Jamie Noble, and that's where I'm going next. Now, I should point out before we even get into this, that Mr. Regal was on Twitter earlier this week cautioning people to not believe everything they read. Having said that,
yes, I've read that.
PW Insider did report this week that he'd finalized a deal that will not only have him return to the company first week of January, but they say he's also going to be a vice president within the company. The title, not yet settled upon, his previous title with the company had been director of talent development and head of global recruiting. Either way, presuming this to be true, and maybe Mr. Regal not being dishonest, but, you know, saying don't believe everything you read because the whole story wasn't in there. But the idea of bringing someone in, you know, and we've talked about this a lot in AEW. There are tons of brilliant people there who could help craft things a little differently than they're being done, but they're either not being listened to or not being asked. Here's a situation where you're pretty confident Paul Levesque is bringing William Regal in, and he's going to ask his opinion about things, and he's going to actually take those things into consideration and perhaps implement them too.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Regal is a positive for anybody that hires him. And, obviously, you know, he and Levesque have a hell of a, you know, relationship, and he wanted to go back, and my hat's off to Tony Khan for, you know, working it out so he could, you know, and I'm sure when Regal approached Tony Khan with this, it was, you know, in a professional manner. It was, I get to get the hell out of here, you know. So, yeah, and he is certainly in whatever position, he doesn't have to be on camera to be of value to any company he signed with. I have so much respect for him. You realize what a gentleman. The Regal Benoit match at the Pillman Show was in the year 2000, 22 years ago, right?
Yeah.
The last time that the Lord and I were in the same building was when we did the Bobby Eaton tribute surprise deal here in Knoxville. And when we started talking, and he said, oh, Les, thank you again for Les. He was thanking me for putting him and Brian and Benoit on that show, and you know, that it helped his leg up to go back to the main roster. And I said, hell, man, you did me a favor, because that video is used. I use it for a teaching tool. I said, I know Dr. Tom doesn't on, but that's the kind of class guy that he is. We're talking about some damn good people here today, aren't we not?
Oh, that is an absolute fact. And we'll get into someone who did the absolute right thing this week, interestingly enough, even though there are some folks who are concerned about where it'll go from here. You want to give folks their flowers when something is done right, and I will do that, Les, after you tell everybody, since we've been talking about training and the 555 drill here in the last few minutes and working with folks, about where they can get a hold of you for bookings and those weekend training camps.
Well, you can reach me at lesthatcher28@gmail.com if you'd be interested in booking me for a one-day seminar or a weekend training camp. Be more than happy to get the information out to you. To be honest with you, I prefer the weekends because you can get more done. The athletes can learn a lot more. We get a lot more comfortable with one another, and I can see more what they need over the course of 2 days. But anyway, I enjoy doing these, and I will guarantee you it's hands-on. Now, I don't take bumps. I don't get in the ring and work shows. I'm a little over the limit for that, but it is hands-on. I work with everybody, and will do my best to make sure they leave the seminar or the weekend training camp with some tools that they didn't come with, and will help them, you know, with their advancement in the business. So yeah, so drop me a line if you want, lesthatcher28@gmail.com.
So AEW Dynamite was a pretty interesting episode this past week. Of course, we've had MJF's first title defense there against Ricky Starks, which we'll get into in a little bit, and some other, I think, pretty good stuff, I think, for the most part, at least for me on this particular show. But the one thing everyone came across and has been talking about since it happened on Wednesday night is the match between Chris Jericho and Action Andretti. And I know that there are a lot of people out there after that match aired who have already begun going after Chris for how he's going to ruin this and how he's going to suck this kid into a several months long feud that gets him absolutely nowhere. And I admit to you, Les, that the moment Aubrey Edwards' hand hit the mat for that third time, I was thinking about that myself. But we only have one night to go on. And I don't want to start, we can get into how terrible a job he does afterwards, if he does, with this young fella. But right, as far as one night and this one match is concerned, I give Jericho all the credit in the world. Because, and you can obviously talk about the finer points of the match, and I hope that you will. But the thing for me that I recall vividly, and I know you do too, is the way those matches where the young upstart gets a win over the established star happened, that Chris Jericho had a bird's eye view to, and even was part of one in WCW, where those wins really weren't wins at all. They were winks by those veterans at the camera and at Eric Bischoff. See, I did what you asked. I can put younger guys over, yada, yada, yada. And they did it in ways where that young person got absolutely next to nothing in the match and then got beat down afterwards and nobody remembers, and it wasn't good for anything, and there was no momentum coming out of it for those people. And Chris Jericho was in one of those, and he saw plenty of those, and he made a specific decision, a choice to do the complete and exact opposite of what he saw veterans in his day when he was a young guy doing. And I just want to give him his flowers because he deserves them. He did the absolute right thing this week.
Yeah, he absolutely. Before I get into that, and I'm like you, props to Chris for what he did. I want to take a quick moment here to say, I've you know, people know I'm not a Young Bucks fan, but I certainly, I can't deny their brilliance. They know how to have the best, the biggest quarter hour on that show. So, be on first,
yes,
right?
That's right.
Hey, they don't listen to this show, but I bet they see the quarter hours. When I saw them come out, I said to Jim, okay, they're going to, we know why they're on first. Anyway, moving on. Yes, as a matter of fact, I want to mention, today, this morning, I saw on Twitter some fans taking Jericho to task. And I won't say that they were totally wrong. One of them said, well, you got this young guy who may have a future, and you're getting some long, drawn-out, boring storyline that's never going anywhere. I thought, that kid must be talking about sports entertainers versus pro wrestlers, because that, if they're talking about that, I agree with them 100 frigging percent. That's been, I don't know how long that story, where that storyline first started, but it's still dragging on and it's not worth a damn. But this past Wednesday night, now at first I thought, oh God, you know, my first thought was, Jesus, you know, this thing is going 20 minutes or something, and this kid's going to get his ass handed to him. And, you know, what's the reason behind that? But now, let's face it, at Chris's age, he's got to pace himself. I mean, I'm not saying that like it's a secret, or if you pay attention, if you understand the business. But when he finally decided, okay, we're going to go all out and take this thing home and take it down to the finish, they had one hell of a match. I will say this, maybe one of the best damn matches I've seen Chris Jericho have in recent months. Because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't about walking and talking and gimmicks and this and that. At first it was, but, you know, then it started to roll, and man, they had hell. And it, you know, when I saw this kid, who the hell is Action Andrade? What? Another, you know, I knew he was a young, had been a young indie, had a great colorful costuming but I, you know, put together well, in good shape. And by the end of the match, I thought, damn, this kid's got a future. And of course he does, if he's booked right, if he works with the right people, if all the pieces of the puzzle come together. But yeah, I'm going to say Chris did a hell of a job. And apparently Chris, you know, and I said, is it Chris, kid's too old to be Chris's son. And Chris, maybe Chris is training somebody behind the scenes, but apparently Chris saw the kid, saw the value, saw the look, and the guy, I guess, talked to him and, you know, saw that he had a good attitude and decided, okay, I'm going to help him make something. Good job. Good job for Chris. And yes, and please don't drag it out, and please forget that you ever did a sports entertainers versus pro wrestlers angle, and I will forget it as well.
And in further fairness to Chris Jericho, while we're saying nice things about him, because we haven't done a whole lot of that lately, you know, it really is an extension of a lot of the work he did his last few years in WWE. I mean, there, it's amazing how quickly reputations can sort of turn, or your expectations of someone, because those last few years in WWE were all about putting him in there with younger guys or guys who needed to raise their profile, and he was there to have great matches with them and help elevate them. And he did a wonderful job at it in WWE. It's just you know, we had not seen him really do that to this kind of extent, at least in one match in AEW. His role here has been very different. But, you know, don't forget that he was doing that pretty regularly in WWE the last few years and was damn good at it.
Yeah. Yes, he was. And you know what? And I realized that the last match on the show, the title match, the MJF and Starks match, had the lowest numbers. And I'm not throwing anybody under the bus, but my first thought when I found that out is Starks. Because there was no question in my mind who was going out of there with their hand in the air. There was no question in my mind when I found out what the match was 2 or 3 days before that. So I would say, you know, a lot of people knew. His first title defense of any, you know, consequence. Is he going to lose? I can't believe after all this buildup. And I will say this. Talk about your look. I love the short way, the short ways to Jaxmore from my generation, right? MJF looked like a pro, man. He looked like a champion. He did. You know, Starks is a good talent, but I think the way he's been used and where he's been used more, you know, in the middle of the card for the most part, that, you know, that a lot of people had the same feeling that I just mentioned is, that, you know, hey, I bet they have a good, but we know that MJF's going to win. So that could be part of the lower numbers too. I don't know. But I thought they had a damn good match. I would like to offer a muted microphone to the Gun Club if they would take it. Jesus Christ, the Acclaimed, and if the Gun Club and the Acclaimed, I have to turn my volume down on my TV if they got out and started promoting against one another. Guys, want to learn how to do a good promo? You don't have to scream at the top of your lungs. Find some old Jake Roberts stuff, and Jake would draw you in because he talked and made points and raised his voice and lowered his voice when he should and so forth, so on. Yeah. You know, again, let's face it, we just, you know, props to MJF, props to Starks, props to Jericho, props to Action Andrade. What a hell of a name. Anyway, you know, it was a decent show, I thought. And the numbers were up. Were they not?
They were indeed.
The best numbers they've had in a long time.
Yes, up 13% from last week, too, up to 950,000 total. Again, unfortunately, this pattern remains, and so we won't belabor it, but the first quarter being the highest rated with over a million for that triple threat, I almost said, for the trios match as part of the Best of Seven series, and everything, every quarter after that went down except for one, which was Jericho and Andretti. So credit to Chris for that as well, because he was the only one outside of the opening segment who drove the number up. So he deserves recognition for that. You know, I'm glad you mentioned with Ricky Starks the fact that a lot of it could also have to do with the way he's been used, because we talked about this when they made the match. You know, I would have loved to have had a few more weeks of build for that thing, because it is MJF's first title defense. No one is going to believe that he's going to lose it. So it makes more sense to get invested in, to get people invested in Starks, to spend a little more time rather than just booking this tournament and having him win in the last 3 weeks when he'd basically been MIA for a while. So you know, it would have been nice if he had been more of a regular in the last couple of months and been on a real hot streak, so that you could at least have some semblance of doubt, and maybe he could have created a little more doubt if he'd had more time on the microphone for a 2 or 3 week stretch to help build the match.
Yep.
So, you know, there were things there that didn't lend themselves for this match to necessarily break that pattern, and unfortunately it didn't. But something happened at the end of the show that we talked about potentially taking place last week, and glad to see it, but also it has me thinking about obviously what's going to be happening with Bryan Danielson and MJF. And, you know, my big thing recently has been like, I'm just sick and tired of watching Bryan Danielson lose, yada, yada, yada. I'm not taking this thing off of MJF anytime soon either, but I am looking forward to seeing the two of them get together.
Yeah. You know, something struck me in my mind. Bryan Danielson and FTR, three of the best damn workers, head and shoulders in that company, have been doing more jobs than they're getting their hand raised, right?
They have, for the most part, yeah.
And some meaningless people who we'll never see probably again next year are winning matches. Or, hey, maybe Danhausen, and never mind. I'm not even going there. I don't even want to think about what I just thought about. Believe me. No, it's just, you know, and when I'm talking like this, it's not that I dislike, I don't even know these people, but I'm talking about how to use talent in wrestling. You know, do you try to promote new talent like we're talking about the kid Andrade? Yes, you do. You try to elevate them if you think they've got it in them to, you know, to continue to grow. But there are certain guys who, they don't belong in the middle. They don't belong at the top. And if you're going to use them constantly, then they've been used in the lower part of the show. And there's a lot of those guys are getting high profile than this company. And it's just honestly, that time would be better spent with their actual guys that they know can draw a crowd. So that's just my two cents.
You know, I had almost forgotten. Good thing I'm sitting here scrolling through some of our notes for today's show, because this is actually a really big story and might have been the biggest story of the week had the Wall Street Journal not had what they had about Vince McMahon. We've been speculating for quite some time about Ring of Honor and a weekly television show. And Tony Khan had indicated before the Final Battle pay-per-view last week that he would have some sort of announcement regarding a television deal for Ring of Honor. And so obviously there's been a ton of speculation. Now, if you follow the entertainment business outside of wrestling at all, you know there have been a lot of changes at Warner Brothers / Discovery, the television partner of Tony Khan's here in All Elite Wrestling. And they've been making a lot of moves outside of television in terms of movies, franchises. I mean, they recently just decided, after telling Henry Cavill he could go on social media and let everybody know he was back as Superman, and he quit a gig that he had that was doing really well on another show in order to do it. They just told him day before yesterday, I believe, that he won't be coming back as Superman after all, because they decided to change the creative for the next Superman project. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there, and including a lot of changes in the last week or two at the different networks under the Warner Brothers Discovery banner. A lot of the people who made the move once that merger took place are now finding themselves, well, enjoying, I imagine, some pretty hefty severance packages, but they're no longer doing what they were doing as recently as 2 weeks ago. But this has to be, I mean, I can't imagine seeing this as anything other than an immense disappointment, even though if you've been following what Warner Brothers Discovery has been up to, it can't be terribly surprising. But we had all these fantasies in our head about another hour somewhere of television on the family of networks there for Ring of Honor. And instead, Tony Khan announced that Ring of Honor's weekly TV show, when it debuts, will be on Honor Club, same place it was before he bought the company.
Right. And you know, he's talking about, you know, Sinclair and what they've done. If he has the same sort of set, if he tries to keep the company at that level, he's not doing the company nor himself or his money any favors. Because that there's one of the reasons that they could never really get into the mainstream, because Sinclair would never spend the money to improve the sets, the lighting, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully that he will do that. You know, I'm not buying a stream. Yeah, I'm not paying $10 to watch more wrestling, but I'm sure there will be people that will do that. And of course, you know, some of the roster members, from the way he talks, is that they'll bounce back and forth. You know, they'll still can work within the AEW framework as well. And some will be with ROH only. And I think in a way that's good too, because you're going to take some of your main guys who may cost you a fan or two at AEW and make them exclusive to Ring of Honor, so that will help sell some subscriptions, don't you think?
I do. And in addition to that, he also talked about how much New Japan participation he is hoping for / expecting in Ring of Honor. And he's been having some ongoing discussions with them about that. There's another hook potentially for people who are serious wrestling fans and are paying subscription prices for things like wrestling. If you get an opportunity to see New Japan in a Ring of Honor, and perhaps you either are recently or are not a subscriber to New Japan World, you can spend the $9.99 to see some of your favorite guys in New Japan regularly in Ring of Honor. That might be something that would attract folks who would be inclined to pay for Honor Club or something like that. So there's another little added nugget there potentially. And then, of course, but if you're Tony, sure. I want to go back to something you said at the start here. If you're Tony, I wonder if this isn't a little bit of an issue for you, because there's two sides of the coin about improving the production value and the look of the show. On one hand, you would think you would want to do that, because as you pointed out, what Sinclair was doing was not going to get Ring of Honor to any other level above where they were. But now if you're Tony and you're stuck having to ask people to pay to watch this show, do you have or do you want to spend the money to change a whole heck of a lot in terms of the look? Because now I'm just trying to, you know, again, you're asking people to subscribe, so maybe that's an incentive for you to step it up. But on the other hand, it's like, I don't have any guaranteed money coming in from this thing. So how much do I want to spend to improve it?
Yeah, you're right. There's the two sides of that coin. Absolutely. And hopefully he finds an ideal middle ground somewhere so that he can improve the values and still, you know, not spend, overspend. God knows how much he's spent with what he's got now.
Really? Yeah.
But yeah, it's something to look for in the year of 2023. That's for sure. I know we're about to wrap this bugger up, and I know I've actually got to make a living. I've got to work today. For those who don't know, I actually work for a living. We got a couple. I want to remind the folks that we will not be together next week because I won't be available to do a podcast in any way, shape, or form. But on the 30th, we will record and do an end of the year and whatever. We're not going to sing Old Hang Syne, are we?
Oh, God, no. No.
God, no.
Definitely not.
Okay. But, yeah. We won't talk to you guys for another couple of weeks, and it'll be after Christmas. But said this last, I want to say it again. If you're traveling, be safe. Wish you all a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and God bless you. And, you know, again, the safety factor and stay well and enjoy your families and your friends.
I want to second that emotion, and I also want to point out, since we started the program today talking about deadlines in terms of mailing out gifts to be able to have them there in time for Christmas, and you got to hustle if you want to do that, especially if you don't want to pay extra for it, but there also is the possibility of digital downloads this holiday season for a lot of folks less, and I know that there'll be plenty of folks hustling to grab their credit card here in the next minute or two, because for the wrestling fan in their life, or maybe you're just going to treat yourself this holiday season, there are plenty of t-shirts and DVDs to be had.
Yeah, we can sell you a few of those too. Talking about the t-shirts at Pro Wrestling Tees, you can get a copy of the first ever pro wrestling t-shirt on the market, the Briscoe Booster Tee, put out by Jack, Jerry, and myself in 1972. Artwork by Jerry the King Lawler, and you also get I'm a Les Thatcher guy. If you happen to be one, you get both those at Pro Wrestling Tees. Then Wrestling with the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, over 6 hours of content. Both are two DVD sets with matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski and I do the voiceover. You can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And, of course, the big four-disc set, the Brian Pillman Show's anthology, the 20th anniversary, 15 hours of content on those four discs, all four of the great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, matches, interviews, awards, extras, and you can get that at those two addresses I just mentioned, but also at PillmanShows.com. So, I'm taking off next week and it'll be out, but if you happen to be around exit 128 and on I-75 in Tennessee, drop off and come to 313 North Main Street and check me out. I'm here usually Tuesdays through Saturdays at Mountain Barn Builders, my son's business, but we can talk wrestling. We also show you storage buildings, carports, playhouses, pet kennels, and more. So, and Victor, as always, my friend, damn, we're about to finalize another year, are we not?
We are. It's just really strange how fast time has gone by on this.
I'm sure Tony behind the scenes at the Observer is just want to reward us handsomely for that, don't you think?
A hefty raise or maybe just a Christmas bonus?
Tony listening back there, yes. Speaking of Grinches and Christmas and all that. Anyway, before we start crying here, hell.
Yeah.
Take us home, big guy.
All right. We are wrapping up this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly for the legend Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Again, won't be around next week. We'll return near the end of 2022, I should say. That's going to be on the 30th of December. So between now and then, have yourselves a very Merry Christmas and we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.